And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right, this is Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and we are here, of course, talking about your Toronto Blue Jays, who at this time of recording on, Wednesday, they dropped the series 2-1 to the Tampa Bay Rays at the Tropicana Field in Tampa St. Pete, which, not what you want. A bit of a bit of controversy there between the Blue Jays and the Rays. The benches did empty at the end of Wednesday afternoon's game after Ryan Borucki plunked Kevin Kiermaier. After Kevin Kiermaier committed the heinous sin of picking up a card off the ground that may or may not have had Blue Jays scouting reports on it for opposing hitters, based on a card that would have been in the possession of Alejandro Kirk moments before. And I kind of said it a bit today. I don't know why anyone would be mad at what Kiermaier did. That's what all anybody's going to do. Is grab it. I mean, it's a competitive advantage. It's not like I don't think it's so bad. I don't think it's something that was worth getting as mad about it as everybody did. And then it went on now for 2 days. And then apparently Kevin Cash and Charlie Montoyo smooth things over. And then there comes Ryan Borucki with the beanball, which you never like to see that. You don't want to see anybody get hurt. But at the same time, maybe you kind of like to see that. Shrug. But anyway, Caitlin and I discussed it a few weeks back, and I said, we both agreed that if the Blue Jays go 3-3 against the Rays, we think they would make the playoffs. Well, guess what? They went 3-3 against the Rays. So fingers crossed if you're a Blue Jays fan. The big one, of course, coming up is still that series with the Yankees, as the Yankees continue to be pesky, to stay around, to not go away. But the Blue Jays have, at this time of recording, 4 coming up against the Twins in Minnesota. And then that series against the Yankees, which is a big one, maybe. The Yankees' schedule coming home is tough, not as easy as the Blue Jays, who have the Twins, the Yankees, and then the Orioles, of course. But you know this, if you're listening to this show. You know what the job ahead of the Toronto Blue Jays might be. But I wanted to talk to someone about the Toronto Blue Jays, someone who knows some of the players in the team, someone who knows what it takes to develop players. So this was fun for me to talk to Kevin Goldstein of Fangraphs, national writer of Fangraphs, and of course the host of the Chin Music Podcast. Kevin and I had a great chat, talk about Teoscar Hernandez, which is not only Kevin's favorite thing to talk about, it's everybody's favorite thing to talk about, because everybody loves Teoscar Hernandez having an amazing season that we all love to see from a guy who is the king of good vibes. So with no further ado, I'm going to remind you of two things. I'm going to remind you to subscribe to The Athletic, to go to theathletic.com/spinrate to subscribe to this show and let them know that you're listening by using our little code. You can get so much of this pennant race coverage from Caitlin McGrath, the co-host of Spin Rate, who covers the Blue Jays, from Lindsay Adler, who covers the Yankees, from Keith Law, who covers the prospects, from the national guys who cover the scandals, from Eno, who covers the science. This is the time. Subscribe to The Athletic if you haven't already. It's also the time to subscribe to this show if you haven't already. Wherever you get your podcasts, if you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Podcaster, what's that other one called? Podbean. Wherever it is, dial it up. Pick this show into your arms and hold it like you love it. I don't know about that. But anyway, that's the housekeeping. It's out of the way. So right now, I'm going to go to the conversation I had with Kevin Goldstein of Fangraphs. He's a national writer at Fangraphs, and he's the host of the Chin Music Podcast at Fangraphs, where They have no accounting for the taste of guests, where I was a guest earlier this summer. But they do, on Chin Music, have great musical guests. His name is Kevin Goldstein. Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, of course. Good to be with you.
You have to balance the good musical guests with the bogus Blue Jays guests when the opportunity presents itself. I think, are you repping a Kowloon Waltz City sweater right now? There you go.
I am. It's an old school one.
I've got the elephant shirt.
That one's upstairs myself as well. Yes.
Yeah. Two very good new Kowloon Waltz City songs are out there from what I assume is to be a new record.
So yeah, I'm for excited. Sure. I consider their bass player a dear and close friend.
He is, I would consider him a very much a friend from online. I have been on the podcast many times in the past, and we did a live stream at the beginning of all of this on some of the YouTube, but one of the good ones, Ian Miller, yeah. Shout out.
Yeah, we love Ian. I was in the Bay Area about 6 weeks ago and took an afternoon and went to his home and had a fine lunch and afternoon with Ian, his lovely wife.
Well, his ears will be burning when he hears this.
We had Burmese food. Who does vegan Burmese food? Exactly.
That is exciting. That's, you know, you live in the Bay long enough, you'll get there. It's a gear that not some of us have to aspire to. Speaking of aspiring to things, we're here to, of course, talk about Toronto Blue Jays. We can talk about Ian. We can talk about Kowloon Waltz City and heavy metal all night long. I wouldn't until the cows come home, but that's not what people are tuning in to this. We want to know what, or I want to know what you think about these, your Toronto Blue Jays here as we, come down the stretch in the 2021 season.
I it's funny because I think when you add it all up, if you look at, you know, you think about the start, you think about what the trade deadline, you think about the super hot streak that got him back into the playoff race. And then you think about, you know, it's Thursday and what we saw this afternoon against the Rays. I think if you add it all up and just look at the Blue Jays win loss record right now, it's kind of what we thought they would be, right? They'd be an above 500 team who would compete for a playoff spot, not a monster, a team with a lot of really good players, a team with some very obvious and glaring flaws. And at the end of the day, they're better than a 500 team, and that's what they've been. And they're in the running for a playoff spot, if not, you know, kind of a light favorite to get a playoff spot and end up in the coin flip game. So I think overall they are would be, I mean, you know, I'm not telling you anything new. I tell you most days they need to hit, you know, the you know, that team revolves around, and the starting pitching has been, you know, pretty impressive of late, but that team revolves around whacking balls around the park and hitting balls really hard. And that tends to be what they do. And that tends to be what they need when they win. And, you know, we'll see what happens from here, but, you know, they are a favorite to make the wild card game.
It's an interesting bunch, I think, because I tend to agree with you. At the beginning of the season, I said, I think if the Blue Jays don't make or you know, if I had to say they were going to be in this position in March, I would have been like, if they weren't in this position in March, it would be, in my mind, a disappointing season. There's a lot of talent on hand, but I don't think that if you asked me to describe how it would look in terms of, especially individual performances, like if we sat here and said, well, yeah, Robbie Ray would probably be the kind of odds on favorite front runner or if nothing else, like a 7-win pitcher, like no matter how the award season shakes out, everyone would say that I'm crazy. I don't know what you think about a guy who has had obviously such great stuff, but and hasn't done anything spectacularly different. But now here he is, a guy who's just putting up incredible numbers. I mean, this is kind of like, I don't know, a player development kind of dream, but just like the right tweaks made at the right time, and they really unleashed an excellent player.
Yeah, I mean, there's a story to be told here, and I'm sure someone will one day figure it out. And I don't know, you know, how much of it was just, you know, maybe analytics, how much of it was coaching. And I'm sure, you know, as always, even though it tends not to be credit, a lot, it's the player. The player deserves all the credit.
Sure.
You know, Robbie Ray always had great stuff. And Robbie Ray was always, you know, when I was with the Astros, you know, what the Astros did with pitch day at the time was ahead of the crowd. And you know, from day one, Robbie Ray was identified as a guy with, you know, unbelievable stuff, mm-hmm. You know, stuff beyond it, above and beyond. And now all of a sudden this season, he is, you know, his walk rate's less than half of what it's been historically. And that's everything. And all of a sudden he's locating and throwing strikes. And, you know, if you can do that with those kind of weapons that he has, you're going to be a monster. And he's been a monster, but, you know, it's a really good point that, like, yeah, they should be, but like I don't think in April people were talking about Robbie Ray as an MVP. I don't think even in April, I think everyone loved Vlad, but I don't think people thought Vlad would do this. I'm sure everyone thought he'd be better, but not like a 1,000 OPS dude. And so all of a sudden, you know, you do have some surprising performances, but at the same time, there's obviously some disappointments. And, you know, it started before the season started with Kirby Yates. And, you know, it's been a weird year. And but that's how most teams are. I think if you look at teams that are, you know, where you thought they would be, the way they got there doesn't necessarily match up with what you thought it would be in April. It's just, you know, more of a, you know, some players are going to overperform, you know, some players are going to underperform. It's just like, where are we starting on that baseline?
For sure. Yeah. I think back at the 2016 Blue Jays as an example, where like they ran six starters out there. That's it for the whole season. Like four guys made 30 starts and then one guy made 20, one guy made 10. And the team generally looked as you expected to look, but though that's the exception to the rule. One thing I'd love to get your thought on, something I've talked a little bit about on this show with some other folks too, is like the idea of how it comes up to the player, and it's the player, you know, making changes or kind of integrating feedback, but how much of that in terms of player development is recognizing a guy who's going to be able to do that. We love this guy. If he did this, it could really unlock him, but is he that guy to make that change?
Yeah, for sure. It's a big part. It's something that, you know, maybe gets underreported in the sense that when you're looking to acquire a player via trade or free agency, you know, a lot of work goes into like, what's this guy like? What's his, you know, who is this person? You know, beyond just the talent. And, you know, I the first real success story that the Astros had doing that kind of thinking was with Colin McHugh. Mm-hmm. And it was very much, you know, Colin McHugh was a claim off a 40-man roster. And it was very much, wow, his worst pitch is his two-seam fastball. That's the pitch he throws the most. His best pitch is his curveball. That's the pitch he throws the least. What if we tried something and said, stop throwing this, start throwing that? And luckily, you know, and we did some work on Colin, and he is like an exceptionally cool dude. Mm-hmm. Acquired Colin McHugh, and it got to the, you know, and he was like, yeah, if you think it'll keep me in the big leagues, let's try it, you know, because he was a bounce up and down guy. Mm-hmm. And he was very open to it. Certainly acquired players, not going to name names here, who went to him like, you know, we have some ideas we can prove. And it was very much, you know, can I use profanity here?
Oh yeah, yeah. Go
nuts. Like, it was very much, you know, fuck you dorks, you know. And that was that. And mm-hmm. You know, and fine. And I think at times, and I'm sure, and maybe Robbie Ray's become this guy, but I always remember you know, when the Astros trade for Justin Verlander. And Justin Verlander seemed like it opened, you know, open to things. At the same time, he was Justin Verlander. So he was with multiple Cy Youngs, MVP awards. He could have walked in and said, screw you guys, I don't care what you think, I'm just pitching. It would have been, okay, great. Mm-hmm. You know, but he walked in and he said, show me everything you got in me. I want to see everything you got. I want to see every single piece of data. I want to know everything you think. And then it turns into a thing where you acquire players down the line and Justin Verlander's pulling these players aside and going, hey, listen to them. They know what they're talking about. This is what they did for me. That can mean more than just having like an analytics guy go talk to somebody. Mm-hmm, and you know, and having a good pitching coach makes a huge difference for that kind of stuff. But it's really important to kind of know who you're getting and see, you know, are they open to change? Are they open to suggestion? Are they open to coaching? Or do they just think this is what I am and this is what I do? And there are both of those beasts in Major League Baseball.
We'll be right back with more Spin Rate. But first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Is there room for, I'm trying to think of the best way to, like almost like a nerd whisperer. I know that Rick Eckstein, David Eckstein's brother, served in a sort of, in a role like that, where he was like kind of not in uniform in the dugout, but was sort of trying to be a go-between and somebody who can just help either the nerds, for lack of a better term, to like speak this, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk and, right, and help the other guys to get that buy-in. Do you think that there's maybe a bit of a role in that, or is it just... Is there value in having a guy who can have a foot in both worlds, I guess?
My suggestion would be to just cut out the middleman and have a pitching coach who can do that. Mm-hmm. Have a pitching coach mm-hmm. who cares about this stuff, but then knows how to speak to players and work with players. I think direct interfaces between like in-office analysts and players, I think tend to be counterproductive. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, having a pitching, you know, I think the best thing to do is to have pitching and hitting coaches who are open to those discussions, and they are the person relaying it to the player.
That makes a lot of sense. And I also wonder, as the game is changing in terms of just the aging, the next generation comes through, so many of the young players, I think, have been through such specialized coaching and been through the drive lines and those sort of places where a lot of those places throw jargon at everybody anyway, as an attempt to be like a market, you know, as a marketing tool. But B, so many of these players perhaps have been through that kind of specialized coaching, and they're more used to hearing things in a bit more of a soup to nuts way, as opposed to a, you know, baseball, just grip it and rip it, kid, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's a massive difference. You're right. And, you know, it gets to the point where, you know, you're drafting kids now and you get them into your space and they've already seen their Rapsodo data or their TrackMan data. They know what their pitches shapes look like. And you know, it even just the concept of pitch shape is anything but foreign to them. They know exactly what you're talking about. They know exactly what, you know, they want. And you can kind of hit the ground running. And because they've been exposed to it already, and, you know, most college programs have a TrackMan unit in their stadium, you know, and they're mm-hmm. using pitch data, the larger schools. And so, you know, even the high school kids are seeing, you know, Rapsodo and TrackMan, things like that, the bigger names at the showcases and things like that. So you have reached the point really over maybe just the last 5 years where, you know, teams are drafting players and they're coming to you already, if not completely and utterly comfortable, at least having been exposed to the technology. It's not a completely, what the hell is this thing? You know, what are you putting on my bat right now? You know, what are these numbers? What are these dots? That's not the case anymore. You get these kids in and they're already acclimated in some ways and can kind of hit the ground running better. And they're even, you know, far more open to it. And I think, you know, part of that is seeing all the success stories that we've seen, you know, coming out of pitch data and things like that, they're not as resistant to it, if you will.
So we can't talk about player development without talking about a Blue Jays player development success. The one by which all others should be measured, well, this decade anyway. And that's, of course, Teoscar Hernandez, someone who you get asked about every time you're doing any kind of Toronto media, because, well, people love him. People love Teoscar Hernandez, who seems like he has the best time on the field, seems like a good dude, and is having an insanely great year. Did you think that this was inside of him, this kind of a season, like where he's just hitting for power, hitting for a really high average, you know, just making it work?
I mean, let me start my answer by saying that, like many of you and many of your listeners, I also love Teoscar Hernandez. And I know Teoscar. And now I will say, no, I did not think he'd be this good. I thought he was going to be, you know, probably a good fourth outfielder, maybe a second division starter if everything worked out. I never thought he'd hit for this kind of power or this kind of average. And, so no, I'm pleasantly surprised that he has, and that I couldn't be happier for Teoscar. But no, I didn't think he'd be this good. I'm not sure anyone did. I know, to be fair, I'm not even sure the Blue Jays would, you know, if the Blue Jays were, you know, if you got him in the corner, put a couple of drinks down their throat, I think they'd probably admit to you they didn't think he'd be this good either. But, you know, you take it. Like, you know, like I said, players sometimes overperform and underperform. Sometimes players change in dramatic ways, both for good and bad. And Teoscar might be a really good lesson for all of us, really, in just the sense that, you know, when you think about players who've exceeded expectations, a frequent factor in that is makeup. You know, Teoscar's makeup is literally off the charts. You know, he works incredibly hard. He also, and I think this shows, and you know, it goes back to what you said when you first brought him up, is just that dude loves playing baseball, and that matters. It matters a lot, and it matters for how, you know, how much guys are going to work. And he's been really good. I couldn't be happier. He's you know, he is my favorite Blue Jay, and it's probably because like he's the Blue Jay I know the best. Mm-hmm. And I had really good interactions with him. But you know, I've told the story before, but like my you know, the first time I ever traveled, when I got, you know, I started with the Astros in September of 2012. And maybe, you know, 3 weeks into that, I went to Kissimmee, Florida for instructional league and, you know, went down there and was watching the team do instructional league stuff. And I remember asking like, who's the kid with the bat speed? And somebody else, Tasker Hernandez, he's had a pretty good showing in the GCL. It's like, oh man, it's pretty interesting. And he wasn't regarded much of a prospect at all, but you know, he had bat speed and you know, clearly was twitchy and liked him. And I've been following him ever since. And you know, got to spend some time with him after that at low A and stuff like that. And you know, see him, you know, most Januaries at our complex in the Dominican, getting ready to come to spring training. And the kid just works and he loves baseball. Yeah, I should call him a kid. He's not a kid anymore. He's a grown ass man hitting balls 425 feet. So yeah, I love Teoscar. I you'll never find me say a bad thing about Teoscar, but yeah, you know, I can be honest with you and say, no, I did not think he would be this good. I'm thrilled that he is.
It's to me, it's really interesting because he, to my eye, which is untrained, there isn't like a big change, right? Like there's a bit of a change in approach. I don't think that's unfair to say, but like he didn't go from being a guy who doesn't really walk a lot and still strikes out a lot to being like a guy who doesn't walk a ton, still strikes out a lot, but he's so skilled and able to produce in a way that is, you know, his own, right? Like tons of power, but also hitting for a high average. I mean, those guys are in, you know, either the elite of the elite, or they've kind of gone away, you know, as people are encouraged to draw walks and be patient and get on base however you can. I don't know if I would say I like it. I like it because it's working, but I like because he, no one's tried to like remake him into a completely new player. It was like, as you said, he's got this great bat speed. He's twitchy. And those seems like the things that are carrying him here as he's into his late 20s and having a career season.
Yeah. And it's, you know, when I think about, you know, the Teoscar I first saw and the Teoscar that we see now, like there's two things. One is just kind of the physicality of Teoscar now. He's so much bigger, mm-hmm. Just bigger and stronger. And that makes a huge difference. You know, it's, I know, you know, as an industry, we get obsessed with exit velocities and things like that, but in today's game period, you know, unless you're some sort of like weird freakish player, like Nick Madrigal or something, you really have to hit balls hard to survive. And so, you know, Teoscar hits balls hard. So he survives. And I know the walk rate isn't insanely high. He's still an aggressive hitter. We both know that. But I do think he has definitely improved his approach. I think he chases unhittable pitches less. He still has the big zone, like his kind of red zone for that's where the pitch is and I'm swinging at it is still, you know, above average in size. But I do think it has cut down a little bit. And I do think he's less likely to make, yeah, for lack of a better term, like an embarrassing swing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the chasing that slider in the dirt or, you know, that thing, you know, a foot and a half outside the zone that he tended to, you know, be his bugaboo a little bit when he was coming up in the minors. So I do think his approach is tightened. You might not see it in the walk total, but I definitely think it's there. It is an improved, there are improved swing decisions. And then just combine that with the pure raw strength increase. And yeah, I think those are two of the main reasons we've seen him become the player he is.
I feel like it's the difference between, you know, selective and patient and aggressive
very much
and
so, yeah.
Free swinging. And I wonder about, so he's not alone in that. I think the Blue Jays are among the most aggressive teams at the plate in the sport. Do you think that is the sort of thing that can maybe be exploited against a good pitching team? You know, a team like, well, say Tampa Bay as an example, a team that is able to sort of like find those holes, or is it more of like a day to day thing? Like when the Blue Jays are on, if they're making good to swing decisions, nobody's going to get them out versus a good team can get the Blue Jays out.
I think you just have to live with the player being what the player is, but I don't think it's necessarily an exploitable thing. I think, you know, and let's flip a little bit over to Bichette. Bichette's an aggressive hitter, right? And so, you know, I don't want anyone going to the plate looking to draw a walk. You know, I think we get way too worked about like walks equal good. You know, if you see a pitch you can drive it. And that's basically a good approach in my mind. There are players like Bichette And in some ways, the Oscar, but I think Bichette's a better example, where the number of pitches that they actually think they can drive and can drive, and in reality, is larger than it would be for others. You know, there are more pitch types and pitch locations that you know, Bichette can drive than even, you know, say Giancarlo Stanton. And so, you know, when you have that kind of plate coverage, I don't expect you to become that kind of walk machine, nor would I even want you to. I think it just, that's not your game, and let's not make you something you're not. You know, I always remember, I'm going to date myself. I'm an old man, I'm 52, but you know, Alfonso Soriano was a fantastic player. People go, oh, he doesn't walk. He stinks. And like, if you somehow, you know, got Alfonso Soriano to walk eight times a year, he'd be a way worse player because he wouldn't drive as many balls as he has. He's a bad ball hitter. I mean, let's take Vlad's dad. You know, Vladimir Guerrero Sr. didn't walk a lot because he could hit everything, you know, and let him do that. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I just think you have to expect the players for what they are. And you know, I think the goal of any sort of you know, player development group is to accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative. But you have to, like, this is our starting point. This is what this dude is. You know, we're not going to turn, you know, Bichette into Ricky Henderson. And so let's not try.
Why would you? You are already ahead of the game when you've got someone who can drive such a wide variety of pitches. And the one thing for Bichette that you know, since you mentioned him, is I'm so impressed with his ability to hit the ball with power to right center field. Again, he's like a small guy, and he's obviously super aggressive, but he's just got so much power out there and can take any variety of pitches. And again, there are, you know, we've all seen and can probably think of guys that we would classify as free swinging, guys who seem like they're getting themselves out. But
sure.
Bichette is a guy who goes up there and he's got a plan, right? He knows if he has a good idea of what the pitcher's going to try to do, he knows if he's going to try to pull, or he's going to go the other way, or if he sees this, he's going to take it here. And I mean, is there an element, maybe not an element of like uncoachability or innate, maybe not innate, but like, how much of that is just like pure talent? Like, that's a guy, you see them in a game situation, or if you're evaluating, you're like, that's a guy who has something that I would love to be able to teach, but I don't know that we can.
Right. Yeah. I think it's hard to teach plate coverage. I think, you know, there's balls you can get to and there's balls you can't. But for a guy like Bo Bichette, there's so many balls he can get to, you know, as far as get the bat on. And there are, it's a combination of that's hand eye coordination. You know, we always talk about like, oh, his swing mechanics are bad, or, you know, he's got a hitch, or he's got a loop, or, you know, he's got this going. And that the one thing that we can't measure, you know, we can measure power. We can, you know, with exit velocity like that, we can measure, you know, a guy's swing path and the efficiency of that path. There's no way to measure hand eye coordination. And because of that, I think we forget about it and forget about what an incredible factor this is in hitting, you know, but it's not something we can put a number on. It's not something we can say, oh, like, you know, Joe has 73 hand-eye coordination and Bob has 61. And that's why Joe's a better hitter. But it's such a huge factor that we don't, you know, really talk about enough. You think about, you know, I mentioned Madrigal. If you think about even, you know, a guy like Altuve, who just has insane hand-eye coordination, you know, that's such a thing. And so, you know, you can't teach that. I honestly, you know, believe, you know, you can make a hitter better with better swing mechanics, you know, especially at the kind of the launch and the trigger. But, you know, at the same time, you can't teach somebody better hand-eye coordination. It's just there or it's not.
More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
So we can talk a little bit about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who seems as though he has all of the things that any hitter would want. And anything you would ever want a hitter to have, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has got it, and he's showing it. And you kind of mentioned off the top that you probably wouldn't expect, at the beginning of the season, you wouldn't say, oh yeah, he's going to be, you know, one of the two or three best hitters, or one best hitters in baseball by the end of the season. But at the same time, watching him here through whatever 600 plate appearances, to me, there's nothing that says this is temporary. this is something that's going to go away, because there are just so many skills that he shows in a given game, in a given week, in a given month, that it's like, this is as real as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. This is everything about it looks real. The only question that you have is, like, at what point do you just go, hey, Vlad, you're a DH, and let's go from there. Defense. And, offensively, I don't have any idea how anyone could have any sort of criticism for what he does offensively. And, it took a little bit, took some adjustments. He made those adjustments. I think the league adjusted to him, and then he adjusted back, which is what stars do. See no reason to expect him to be one of the most productive hitters in baseball for the rest of the decade, really. Provided he stays healthy, and so we can all knock on wood for that one. But we know what the numbers look like, and we can call up his BREF page and everything like that and go, wow, that's amazing. But at the same time, like, all the underlying stuff, the numbers that teams look at when they're evaluating player, all of those numbers suggest that this is very real, that there's nothing flukish or lucky or anything like that. Like, all those underlying data say this should be a guy who puts up numbers like he's putting up. And so, I think it's very real. We know what kind of hitter this was when he was coming up. We know what he looked like when he was 15, and he looked like he was a monster. And so, I see no reason to think that Vladdy Jr. is going to keep being Vladdy Jr.
The last name I'll ask you about is another one that maybe you know pretty well, other than Teoscar Hernandez, of course, George Springer. Blue Jays fans haven't seen him at his full powers for the much of the season, but obviously that's a guy that there was a lot of belief in the Toronto front office, and for good reason. What can Blue Jays fans expect to see when George Springer is able to kind of get all the way healthy and get back to 100%, in terms of his health?
Yeah, I mean, you saw it for like 3 weeks there, right? When George is healthy, and George is always a streaky guy, but when George is healthy and hot, George can put a team on his back and absolutely carry them. And he also, and this is soft science, and again, not something that necessarily shows up. But I think you see this already. I hope Jays fans see this already. Like, George brings the vibes, right? And mm-hmm. George brings an energy that is infectious. And I think he is, an incredibly valuable guy to have in the clubhouse. I think he brings leadership, experience, like real posy stuff, super positive energy to everything he does. And I think that stuff matters too. But, a healthy George should hit 270 with 30 and makes all sorts of exciting plays, and he's got a million ways to beat you. He doesn't steal bases, but he does run well. He gets on base, he can hit for power, he can make good plays in the outfield. Like, there's all sorts of ways he can impact a game. And beyond all of that, he's a guy you want around. I know he's scuffling right now. I still don't think he's 100%, but you got to keep throwing out there and hoping you're going to get George at some point, because he's a special player.
Also a guy who showed that like steady improvement as from a young player into his prime, where just improving his swing decisions, I think is the term that you used, and one that makes sense when you look at strikeouts go down and the walks are steady, but everything else starts to come up. And again, I think obviously Astros fans remember and Blue Jays fans in moments here that a guy who is more than primed and more than ready to come and deliver when the big moment demands it as well.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, he's not a shrinking violet. He wants to be up at the game on the line. He wants to be in the middle of big moments, and that's a real thing, and that matters. But he doesn't only accept it. He absolutely thrives on it.
Kevin, I really appreciate you giving me the time and you working through some hydro-related challenges.
Yeah,
where can the people find you and your work and your show and all that other good stuff?
Oh, my goodness. If you want to read the garbage I write, you go to Fangraphs. If you want to listen to me yammer for 2.5 hours a week, I have a podcast called Chin Music. You can find that on Fangraphs, or you can just search for Kevin Goldstein Chin Music on whatever your favorite podcast application is. If you want to see me be an asshole on Twitter, you go to Kevin_Goldstein. And I'm not going to give up my phone number or address. Those are probably the three best ways to keep track of me.
Fair enough. We will not.
You could have my phone number too if you need it.
But oh, sweet! I will take it, and I will ask you about what you think about Deaf Heaven. No, I won't ask you that. That record doesn't do it for me. But that's it. I really appreciate the time. I really appreciate everyone tuning in to this edition of Spin Rate. We will be back on the weekend, Caitlin and I, talking about your Toronto Blue Jays. So until then, thanks so much for listening.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.